Glad you're here with us on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. You can follow me at facebook.com/Clark Howard. And coming up in just a few minutes is one of those lottery jackpots that's coming up that's worth more than $500 million. Billion with a B. How in the world could that be a Clarkrageous moment? I'm going to fill you in. And later, I just mentioned a second ago my Facebook page. Well, Facebook obviously is a pariah right now to so many people around the world because of ways your personal information has been manipulated. I want to tell you what Facebook is going to offer you as a way to try to make amends. So, don't know if you've heard, there's a movement around the world, just a tiny one here in the United States, to make playgrounds dangerous again. That we are sending messages to our kids that danger is to be avoided at all costs. And there's this backlash to make playgrounds more adventurous again. It was not unusual when I was growing up, if one of the dinosaurs didn't get you, that you could easily get hurt on the playground. And so it led to a multi-generational movement to make playgrounds as safe as they possibly could be. Well, the thought now is there's a difference between making playgrounds safe and making them to the point where we have in kids' heads that they're never supposed to take risks at all. And I think that part of the whole export thing with the ultra, ultra dangerous, many of the exports are extremely dangerous activities, that it's kids looking for more challenge as teenagers and young adults because they were too coddled and too protected from danger. It's been a tendency in our society to try to excise risk from life. The odd thing is that it's kind of like Newton's law, equal and opposite reaction. And an example of that involves something that one of my children has, which is extreme peanut death allergy, where even exposure to peanut dust causes her face to swell up and her throat to start to close. She has to travel everywhere she goes with two EpiPens. And now it's becoming clear that medicine, in an excess of caution, made a big mistake where pediatricians, starting a generation ago, were instructing parents not to serve any peanut butter or peanut products to kids till they were older. And so the result has been that the allergy to peanuts and nuts has skyrocketed. And so many people now face an imminent danger of death from just minimal exposure to nuts or peanuts. And the good news is that, and this may sound counterintuitive, there's been a lot of breakthroughs with various versions of feeding people who have extreme peanut allergy minuscule amounts of peanuts or nuts and steadily increasing the dose either through pills that step up or through patches that step up. And the result is pretty clear from the tests going on that it increases someone's immunity to the allergy and takes this from being a life-threatening illness to one that can actually be something that you might break out in a rash or something when you inadvertently are exposed to a nut product instead of it being a potential fatal event. to be exposed to it. And there's a lot of debate now in science and medicine whether we're making our whole world too antiseptic with the intense desire to avoid germs completely. Are we creating new levels of vulnerability among us as people because we're not building up the necessary immunity barriers because we're trying to avoid germs? Now, I know there's always been a roll of the eyes from people in medicine and science about the 5-second rule. Something hits the floor, you pick it up and you eat it anyway. Well, for good or bad, I've always been a believer in the 5-second rule. And I've been fine with my kids doing so as well. And, you know, kids, when they're really young, will pick up anything and eat anything that has fallen to the floor. And the one area I'd say maybe the germ activity is too great for that is if you have a little toddler and you're flying, that kid's going to pick up who knows what off the floor of that airplane and stick it in his or her mouth. Well, that does get to the gross point. Don't recommend that. Marcelo is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Marcelo. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly. You want to talk about one of my favorite things any of us can do in life, and that's have a Roth IRA.
Yes. My question to you, Clark, is it's a twofold, actually. Number one, my concern in putting money aside on a Roth IRA is in the event of an emergency that is greater than my emergency fund, can I reach in and tap on my 401k without being penalized?
You cannot with a 401k, but you can with a Roth IRA.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, with the Roth IRA. So I have my money there. If I got an emergency, whatever, I have young kids, something happens,
yes,
it's greater than my reserve for emergency. Can I go
as long
into
as
Roth
you,
IRA?
As long as you follow one rule, you're free to do it.
Okay.
And that is that you can only yank out contributions, never any earnings. So let's say you have in your Roth, just to keep numbers simple, let's say you have $4,500 in it.
Okay.
And $4,000, that's the dollars you've contributed to it, and $500 are the earnings you've had in it. You can pull out the $4,000, but you have to leave the $500 behind. If you pull out any beyond what you've contributed, then you've caused yourself a problem. The only other circumstance is with certain kinds of rollovers into a Roth where you take money that was in a, let's say, a traditional IRA that you reclassify into a Roth, or you take money from a 401k, you roll it over into an IRA, and then you reclassify it as a Roth and pay the tax due at that time. That money, you're limited and restricted on when you can pull that money out. But just clear, clean Roth contributions, yes, you are free to take those contributions out as you wish, tax and penalty free. You cannot then refund it with that money.
Okay.
So let's say the emergency ends and you'd say, okay, well, that's done. I want to put that money back in. You can only put back in up to the limit for contributions in a year, which is $5,500.
$5,500, correct. Okay. In my other next question, if you don't mind, would be, I'm putting aside 11% on my 401k. As I try to learn more about retirement, and I understand now that one should have different levers that they can pull from, I'm considering now a tax-free withdrawal on retirement, which would be the Roth. What is the right mix percentage-wise? What should I put on one or the other?
Well, I believe right now the 401k you have from your employer, are you given a choice between a traditional 401k and a Roth 401k, or do you only have the traditional available to you?
I have through work, I have the 401k, and then I started on a personal. I opened a Roth.
There is no magic amount that should be pre-tax and after-tax. I just see real advantage to having both types of money. Because if all your money is in a pre-tax kind of account, like a traditional 401k, a traditional IRA, your options, how you would draw the money, are far more limited than when you have the pre-tax pile and then you have the post-tax Roth pile. It allows you in retirement to do year-by-year withdrawals based on what will work best for you tax-wise.
Okay.
So that's why I like having both. There's also, if you have access to a Roth 401k where you work, and it sounds like you don't, but a majority of people now do have access to a Roth 401k, especially right now, unless you're an ultra-high income earner, it's very much to your advantage to go Roth 401k instead of traditional 401k, because tax rates are unusually low right now, and we're running very large federal budget deficits. So the math says that we're likely later to see higher tax rates than we see now, making the Roth versions of investment accounts far more to your advantage. Anne Marie is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Anne Marie.
Hey, Clark.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You want to talk about Experian's new dark web scan?
Right. Now, they're advertising just that you can get a free scan to see if your contact information is in the dark web. But my question is, if you contact them, doesn't that give them a doorway into your information?
Potentially. I just think that there's a lot of hype by Experian with this dark web scan. And what it means is that most of us, some level of information about us is on websites where people are trading in our information. And I don't think it does a lot for you to find out, oh, there is stuff on me on the dark web, because it would be a rare individual that criminals have not gotten hold of at least some of your information. So I don't see value in it. It's another thing of like the whole monitoring thing,
yeah,
like credit monitoring, dark web monitoring, all that. That stuff to me is not valuable. And if you have you put a credit freeze in place?
If you've done a credit freeze,
you've done what I really care about. And we're at a point now that by some estimates, 1 in 5 Americans have put in place a credit freeze.
Yes.
And the reason that I'm really happy, Anne Marie, you put in the credit freeze is what that does is even if somebody has your information, you've prevented them from being able to open new accounts as if they're you. And we can't prevent everything a criminal might do with our identity information, but that is one of the key things that you can control by doing the credit freeze. So don't let Experian have any of your money they don't need to have.
I'm with you on that.
And, you know, the credit bureaus have so cynically used the massive Equifax data breach, the incredibly negligent Equifax data breach, as a money-making opportunity to use the media coverage and the fear that that's caused to get us to sign up for things that make the credit bureaus money, the very organizations that caused all these problems in the first place. And for them to be scoring profits from it, to me, is really, really slimy. It's one of those periodic times where the buzz is building for another one of those giant, giant lottery pulls, this one in the Mega Millions, that is over $500 million and going up as I speak, with the drawing coming up Friday. And I have such a thing about the lottery that if you want to, if you take money that doesn't matter in your life and you spend $2 buying a chance at winning, fine. Because the odds of winning are so remote, so obscure one in over 300 million or so. But when I see people spending money they need for their basic living, and they're just daydreaming that they're going to have this $500 million, and so they buy ticket after ticket after ticket. I'll watch people come in 20, 40, 60 bucks just throwing down on the lottery. Oh, you want to daydream? Have fun. Spend a couple of bucks. Fine. Real money? Not fine. And I will reiterate, if you buy one of these tickets and you win $500 million, and you want to make sure you don't get ripped off with it, as I've said in the past, I am happy to advise a mega jackpot winner in return for you donating 10% of the money to charity. That you do that, and then I'll advise you for free how to sock that money away. And there are things you can win, sweepstakes, things like that, you can win without laying out any money. There's a weird thing going on right now. You may have seen these Valpak envelopes that come to your home, and it's hard to get people to open them up and look at all the coupons inside. So right now they're putting $100 checks randomly in them. No obligation. You don't pay anything. They're just trying to get you to flip through all the coupons and see if you've got the $100 check. Now, that's something I can spend a minute of my time doing to see if I won a free $100. But buying lottery tickets, I don't do that. Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where you learn ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. You can follow me at facebook.com/Clark Howard, which is exactly what I want to talk about right now, is Facebook. Facebook is facing an imminent threat in the marketplace because they were careless and cynical with the information that they collected from you, and then how it has been used and misused over time. Facebook has had people internally for years that have tried to get the company to change the way it does things, but it just didn't happen. And now that the stock has fallen from the mid-180s down to somewhere in the 150s, the market value that's been lost is approaching $100 billion at this point, something like that. Now, everybody's got Facebook's attention. And Facebook has announced that they are putting together a privacy dashboard. And it's not ready for prime time yet. They're working on it. But you will, and I imagine it will tie in to the time that Mark Zuckerberg is testifying before Congress, and to try to lessen the sting of the day, he will almost certainly announce that the new dashboard goes live in 72 hours or something like that. But you will be given in one central place with apparently simple buttons to click on and off how your information is shared and when. And it's not likely to cover everything involved with how your information circulates on Facebook, but it will certainly eliminate the Wild West kind of nature of how Facebook uses and misuses your information today. And this is central to Facebook remaining relevant in people's lives and not having people say, I'm so over it, I'm so done with it. So you will see that change coming in just the next few weeks. And they're not calling a dashboard, they're calling it a central hub, but you should see that happen. So, you know, that's the marketplace working. $100 billion in value being wiped from a company in weeks is the marketplace disciplining as it should. Now, this is at the backdrop of this. There's a new product launch going on that's called Device Co-op that has been launched by the folks at Adobe. And what it allows is for you to be tracked, identified and tracked across any device you use. Home computer, tablet, phone, laptop, anything you're using, any device that you're using, you'll be able to be tracked and identified. And so the participating advertisers in the co-op will know, based on merging of deep data, they'll know what kind of car you drive, what kind of cell phone you use, what plan you're on, with whom, whether you have a boat or not. I mean, you think about any layer with you and what kind of brand boat, what year it came out and all that. And it allows marketers to specifically target you individually. Now, as a result of the Facebook thing, Adobe is going to give you the ability to opt out of all such tracking. And they're going to honor it for, you only have to do it once, it'll honor it for all companies, all devices, all at one time with one opt-out. And as soon as that opt-out is ready, in fact, I think we need to, this is occurring to me on the fly, but just like in the aftermath of the Equifax data breach, we have a privacy thing for your credit information that we have bookmarked at clark.com/Equifax. Maybe we need to do one clark.com/Facebook. And with these privacy issues, that you just be able to know that address. I want to see if we can, if that's going to work for us and pull that off for you. Pat is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Clark.
Pat, I love what you're about to ask me, because this is something that I never know when I talk about something when somebody actually does it. Hit me. What's the scoop? Yes, I'm here.
Okay, I guess I was losing you there. Go ahead.
So what's the scoop that you want to ask me about?
Well, I got burnt years ago with one of the companies trying to hang a damage on a car that I didn't cause, and got out of it okay, but after that I started taking pictures, which I know you also recommend. But I never know how long it's safe to, like, when can I discard them? How long do I have to keep them?
I'm a terrible human being. I take the pictures of a rental car when I walk around it. If there's any damage on it when I first pick it up, I take pictures of it. And of course, they're obviously time-coded from my smartphone. And then when I return a car, I either shoot a short video walking around the car, or I take a number of pictures of the car. And because I use Google Photos, which has unlimited storage for life for free, I never get around to deleting them, which means I'm costing Google capacity in their server farms for having pictures of the right rear fender of my last rental car, which was a Toyota Corolla, and every other rental car I've had over the years. But take those pictures, and are you using Google Photos yet?
No. See, I'm a little paranoid about the cloud. I sync everything with my phone and my laptop, and I don't really want my stuff in the cloud if I can avoid it.
Oh, that's fine. If that's how you feel, that's fine. You know, a lot of people who have iPhones are always facing memory issues where they run up against memory capacity. And Google Photos solved that for iPhone users. And it's a really neat, easy product because it automatically backs up everything for you. But if you're not into that and you're comfortable manually offloading stuff onto your laptop, that's great.
So how long is the, have you heard, like, how far, you know how you always say how long you have to say things.
I would say the longest that I've ever heard somebody say was they claimed that they were contacted by a car rental company 6 months after a rental
Oh, that's not bad.
But that's ridiculous. I mean, you know, if they claim damage to a car and they're saying that it happened 6 months before, I mean, how are you supposed to defend yourself against that if you haven't taken the pictures?
Really?
So, you know, it should be something that they say at the time you return the car, they walk around the car, they give you a clean bill of health, or they don't. But because the should isn't what happens, taking the pictures is very important.
Uh-huh.
So just keep doing that. And I think you'd be completely safe if after half a year you deleted them. You should be 100% safe.
That's good to know. Thank you.
And just keep taking those pictures, because it's funny. Some car rental companies are extremely difficult to deal with on minor nicks on a car, and others have, like one company I rented from recently had this circle thing. It was a silver circle. And if damage to the car was smaller than that circle, it was not considered to be something that you were responsible for. And if it was larger than the circle, then you were. Robert is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Robert. Hello, Robert. I think we're having some little bit of technical difficulty. Robert, I'm going to put you back on hold. And Joel, while we get to the bottom of that, let's see if you can hit me with an Ask Clark.
All right, Clark, let's do it. Ofer wrote in and said, Clark, how do past medical bills affect my credit score?
Past medical bills are what accounts for 50% of the problems that people have with their credit. And they will severely impact your credit score. Now, in the newest credit scoring models, once you paid off a medical debt, it will no longer harm your credit. Where with other items on your report, even after you paid off a late item, the harm to your credit continues for a long time. But because of the pattern with how medical bills work versus credit cards, medical bills a lot of times never show up in your life till they've ended up in collection. Where a credit card, if you've paid it late, you know you've paid it late. Completely different, which is why once one is paid, one is treated differently than the other. And Robert, we're going to see if we've got things working now. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Robert, how can I be of service to you?
I recently was invited to a retirement seminar, and they fed me a nice meal, and they gave me some information about some of their strategies, and then made an appointment for me to sit down with one of the representatives. And after going there, they gave me a couple different options, but really the main option for the amount of money that I had in an IRA that they were able to invest was towards a vehicle called a fixed indexed annuity. And my question is, a viable investment option in retirement, you know, they said that in bad years, you'll never lose money, you'll get zero, but in the good years, you'll get some amount tied to an index.
All right, so did you hear that bomb going off? This is a very important thing, and that is when you get those mailers promoting a free dinner, it is the most expensive free dinner you could go to. An annuity, like the fixed index annuity, is an insurance product that has certain disadvantages under the tax code and some possible advantages, but mostly disadvantages. But in some ways, it mimics an IRA, inferior to an IRA, but mimics it. An IRA is already a tax-sheltered vehicle. If you go into this fixed index annuity, you're paying extreme costs for an insurance wrapper providing you some tax deferral when you already have tax deferral for free in the IRA. In addition, a fixed index annuity is one of the worst possible investments that has ever existed. The idea being promoted is that you get some small part of the gain in the stock market each year, but you will not lose money in a down year. And so the way they're sold is peace of mind. But the problem is the way the stock market works is in short periods of time in specific years, stock market will have enormous upside. And in these fixed index annuities, they're stacked against you by having, as part of the design, where you miss the overwhelming amount of the gain. Plus, you don't get dividends, which account for a significant portion of the gain people have in investments. I despise index annuities, fixed index annuities, and fixed annuities, because the only person who gets any real reward from them is the salesperson selling it to you. So I would say, if the good meal was good, leave it at that, because buying one of these fixed index annuities only leads to lifelong indigestion. Jim joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Clark.
Jim, you are someone who has an HSA account, so I need to ask you a question that people usually do just as politeness. How are you? How's your health?
My health is okay.
The reason I ask that anytime an HSA call comes up is because the HSA, with the very high deductible and then the potential to build a lot of money in the HSA-eligible savings and investment plan, is really one that works great for people who don't go to the doctor a lot.
Okay.
So what's going on with your HSA? How might I be of service?
Well, a couple of years ago, my wife's teacher-based insurance switched to an HSA plan. And I've heard you advocate that when you are able to pay out of pocket and let the HSA plan grow tax-free. And initially, my question was, how do you get that plan to grow? Is that simply by your contribution?
Yeah, no, because you contribute to it, and as long as you are putting nice contributions into the HSA and you invest the money, because there are many HSA plans where you can invest in stock index funds, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. you can, over the years, build up enormous tax-free money in the HSA. And then in retirement, that money is an extremely valuable pile of tax-free money. So it's one of those things that works for a tiny percent of people who have access to an HSA, and that's those that can afford to deal with the high deductibles that you have on health coverage, pay for that out of current money, and then you let the HSA grow and grow and grow tax-free and spend it tax-free. And so I can give you some information. The best HSA investment plans are the ones that allow you to invest in ultra-low-cost Vanguard index funds.
Okay.
A lot of people don't even know you can do that and just have their HSA account money in a simple savings account earning like 0.0.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you are right now?
Well, I've since investigated and, of course, and found out that there are at least a couple of Vanguard options.
Yeah, so the Vanguard options, if you're not going to touch the money, that's how you build significant long-term tax-free money in an HSA, and that makes the HSA a great thing. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast of our show, I'd love it if you'd subscribe. Whatever your favorite podcast app is, we're pretty much there. And whether you love what you hear from me or hate it, take time to write a review. It's how we all learn from each other, is from those reviews.